You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And welcome to all of you who are listening for the very first time tonight. Glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a great habit to get into. Listen, our hosting company, that's the company that hosts our website, has notified us that they're going to transition our website to a new server and a new system on 3/25/08. That is this coming Tuesday. If the past is any indicator of the future, this could well mean a major FUBAR. Now, we're hoping it doesn't happen. They tell me that there'll be no disruption of service. So we're hoping for that, but we are planning for FUBAR. And there's nothing to worry about because all the details of what to do in the event that on Tuesday, and by the way, it could be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They're not real sure, but they're shooting for Tuesday. So we're putting out a FUBAR warning for all next week. But if you go to the site and if it won't open or it won't function or you can't listen, don't worry about that, because everyone who is subscribed to the K-Files e-zine will get the instructions in this edition, all right, the edition that comes out this weekend. So if you're not subscribed, be sure you do subscribe. It's free, absolutely free. There's no reason why you should be in the dark when no one else is. So go over to KevinSmithShow.com and click on the big red letters that say K-Files e-zine and subscribe, all right? And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. We never give that list away to anybody. We never sell it, rent it, lease it, loan it, or in any other way disseminate that information to anyone else. So you're never going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed to the K-Files e-zine. Now, we've got a new change. I hope you'll like it. On our player, you notice on our player that right across the top of the video window, it now is displaying the current song being played. All right. Now, what that means is that if you hear a song that you like, and you want to know, well, who is the artist? What's the name of the song? All you have to do is look at the player, and you will see the name of the artist first, and then after the hyphen, the title of the song, and it's just scrolling across there. And we hope that helps to alleviate the anxiety that many of you have expressed over hearing a song that you really like, and you can't find the artist name, and you can't find the title. Well, we hope that alleviates that. Even though that very same thing has been scrolling on our website for at least the past month. So, well, almost a month. So many of you already are familiar with that. Some of you are not, because you don't pay attention to what's there. paying attention to what's there is important. Paying attention to what's coming is important. Michael Sala, Dr. Sala, will join us to discuss this whole controversy about was there actually a meeting at the United Nations, a secret meeting discussing UFO disclosure. He joins us from Hawaii on the other side of this break.
10, 9.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steeleye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
You know, there's never been a better time for you to start your own broadcast. I know there are a lot of paranormal investigators. I know there are a lot of people who are paranormal experiencers who want to have their own broadcast. Well, now you can right here at Steeleye Media Network. It is within your grasp. You can do it, and we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call today at 1-800-318-1008. On February the 14th, I reported to you that Dr. Michael Sala was reporting that he had received information from a source inside the UN that there had been a secret meeting, a small meeting, and that they had discussed disclosure of UFOs and extraterrestrial life. Now, since that time, there has been a great deal of writing, a flurry of chatter, if you will, on the internet about whether that meeting took place or did not take place. Some of ufology's luminaries, the big wheels, big names, have determined that they're saying, well, at this point, we're going to take the position that it did not happen. And that is because of, they say that one of the witnesses was discredited. And the position that I have taken is that we're not getting that information from only one source. We got that information from other sources. And I think that if one witness has part of his resume discredited, that doesn't mean he's not a witness. And it doesn't mean that he didn't see what he says he saw. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But if you take him completely out of the equation, you still have other witnesses that say it happened. Well, I thought the best thing for us to do is to contact Dr. Michael Sala and ask him to come on the show and talk with us about where things stand with this. Dr. Sala, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hello, hi, Kevin. I'm very happy to be back, and I'm really looking forward to being able to cast some more light on this very complex issue as it's emerged.
You know, the witness in question here, or the witness being discussed, is a Mr. Laurent from France. And the information has to do with that he perhaps overstated some of his credentials, and that there was some backlash as a result of that. But you know something, if I see, this has been my position on this, if I'm a witness, if I see a crime take place, I'm a witness to a crime, and I tell people that my name is General Kevin Smith, that I'm not a general, I've never been a general, I shouldn't say that, but it certainly doesn't mean that I didn't see the crime. And so, you know, if Laurent overstated his credentials, that still does not mean that he did not see what he said he saw. But I don't know where things stand with that. So let's go back and let's start at February the 12th and what was reported to you as having happened on that date.
Well, the important thing is that the February 12 meeting was disclosed to two New York-based researchers, Clay and Sean Pickering, a day before, on February 11. They have developed a relationship with a source who is has a military background and whose current assignment is with the State Department, and that this source had been tasked to go to the UN early on the morning of the 12th to give a briefing or to share information concerning UFOs extraterrestrials. And he told this to the two New York researchers, who then informed me the next day that the meeting had taken place that morning. And they then shared some of the information about what they had been told concerning that meeting. And so that was the subject of the very first article that I put out on February 13. And that was based entirely on this source that I had known of for approximately a year and a half, and who had been known to the two Pickering brothers for approximately 2 years. And so that was a source that we both had a very high degree of confidence in, because this was someone who, over that period of time, had shared many things about current events and the relationship that the UFO topic or that UFOs had with those in terms of the kind of inside information he had. And some of the things that he had shared were pretty accurate. And so that developed a high degree of confidence in what the source was disclosing. And so that meant, and the thing I want to point out to you and your listeners is that over that period of 2 years for the Picking Brothers and for a year and a half for myself, that military source had never said anything to us in terms of go public with this. But on February 11, one day before the meeting, he had shared to the Pickering Brothers that he was going to be attending this meeting at the UN, and that they could go ahead and share this, that they could release this to the public. And so they communicated.
I'm sorry. Do you know who this source is?
I know of his rank, his name, and I know a bit about his background too, in terms of having had some exposure to ET-related projects. In other words, he is someone who is part of the, or he has a need to know. Let's put it that way. When it comes to ET topics.
Okay, but you do know who it is.
I have not physically met him, no.
But you know who it is, though.
That's right, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I know, you know, of his rank and military service and so forth. But as I mentioned, I mean, I've known of him for a year and a half and had been told things about what he had been sharing. But it was never something that I felt there was a need for me to actually travel to have a meeting with him, because this was all relayed to me through the Pickering Brothers, who I have known for approximately 5 years and who have always relayed information to me that was very accurate. And they are two very solid investigators who have a lot of credibility in my mind. And so they have developed a personal relationship with this source, and they have relayed everything to me in terms of, many things to me in terms of the information that the source has on some projects, and in particular on the UN meetings that were held beginning on February 12th.
Okay, now, and for clarity, let's go ahead and say that is not Mr. Laurent.
No, it's definitely not Gil Laurent, who is a French source who I do not know of, other than what has been relayed to me through a French journalist, and also what has appeared on the website of the Federation European Aeroplane in France.
Okay, how does Mr. Laurent come into this picture?
Well, essentially, a week after the Pickering Brothers had relayed to me the information from Source A, as I call him, who's the military liaison assigned to the State Department, about a week later I began to hear, I was told about a French connection, and so information, so my attention was drawn to a role being played by the French here. And then 2 weeks later, Gil Laurent publicly emerged and disclosed that he had attended the meeting, and he gave some very specific information about what was discussed at the meeting and some of the people that attended the meeting. But he was talking about meetings on February 13 and 14, which was interesting. So it was like we had two sources talking about meetings that occurred at the UN, but over a period of days. And so there were some differences between what they were describing, because neither one claimed to have attended meetings on the same day. So it's quite plausible that the descriptions they had over things such as security, what was discussed, could have been very different, because these were meetings that occurred on different days. Gil Laurent shared that information, and I just wanted to emphasize that when he initially revealed himself, this was something that was very significant because Gil Laurent had a very solid reputation within the French UFO community. And a number of prominent French researchers actually vouched for his credibility. And that was something that just brought much more interest into the things that he had disclosed and the things that Source A had disclosed from the February 12 meeting. And in the scrutiny of Gil Laurent's background, then questions began to emerge over his precise association with a particular French organization that had been responsible for releasing the Cometa report in 1999. And it was claimed that Mr. Laurent had falsely represented his association with that French organization, and that in the fallout from that misrepresentation, he was under legal threat, forced to sign a statement saying that he had no affiliation with that organization, and that he retracted any public associations that had been made between him and that organization. And so you had the whole controversy then growing over just how reliable Gil Laurent is, given that the professional association he had with the French Higher Education Defense Institute, that was something he had to retract. But nevertheless, he still it was someone who had worked at a very high level with the French Defense Ministry and with some aviation aerospace organizations in France. And unfortunately, Gil Laurent has not been seen since he has retracted his association with the French organization. So we aren't able to, or at least I haven't been able to clarify to my satisfaction exactly what the misrepresentation was, whether it was him misrepresenting his association or whether it was others misrepresenting it and him not correcting them. I'm not clear as to exactly how the misrepresentation occurred.
Well, let me say that I understand how that can happen. I'm not defending him, but I fully understand because I am formerly an international police officer. And when I tell people that I formerly was with the international police serving under the United States Department of State, they sometimes then will introduce me later to someone as saying I was Interpol. I'm not. That's two completely, absolutely different organizations. But they get it crossed up, and they will introduce me, or they'll write an article, and they'll say I'm formerly Interpol. I never have said I was Interpol. I was not Interpol. I was International Police, which is different, although it sounds similar. So those kinds of things can happen. They do happen. And maybe something like that has happened with Mr. Laurent. I don't know. But I know it certainly is a reality. It does happen from time to time with me. So maybe if we could talk to him, maybe we could clarify that. Maybe we could know. If we take Mr. Laurent out of the equation entirely, we still have that source A, and he's saying that the meeting took place. And let me ask you this. Now, he told the Pickering brothers on February the 11th that he had to be at this meeting on the 12th and that they could release that information to the public. Did he indicate whether this meeting was a scheduled meeting, or was it an emergency meeting, a specially called meeting? How did he phrase that, if at all?
The way in which it was phrased was that it was done in response to the concern of a number of member states to the increasing UFO sightings around the planet. planet. He didn't give any indication as to whether or not it was an official meeting as opposed to something that was convened pretty much ad hoc to address some concerns of member states and done very rapidly. He didn't really address that.
Well, here is the reason that I've asked. There is now, out on the Internet, I'm sure you've seen it, there is an investigator or a writer or someone, I can't remember who it was, who contacted the UN and asked them if they had such a meeting on their docket of meetings. And the reply from the UN was that they did not. And the person replying from the UN gave a list of the scheduled meetings for that day. That has been used to say, okay, we can lay this to rest now. The meeting didn't happen. That is totally, absolutely unrealistic to take that approach, because I can assure everyone listening right now, I can absolutely assure you that there were many meetings that took place in offices of the UN in their building throughout that day that were not on the docket.
I would agree with you there. I think that just because a meeting occurs at the UN doesn't give it the status as an official meeting. With official meetings at the UN, what happens is that those meetings are on the docket, and so it means that a report has to be written of what transpired at the meeting, and then that report would be shared with all member states who were not able to attend the meeting. And if it's an unofficial meeting, then no report has to be written. So clearly, if there is a topic discussed that is something that is only being shared with a certain number of nation states, and it's not necessarily something you want to share with the whole UN community, then doing a meeting that is unofficial and not on the docket would be the way you could actually have a confidential discussion involving some of the member states who are concerned about the UFO issue without actually having to have to put it in writing and send it to other member states, which then creates a paper trail and it maximizes the possibility of official kind of leaks.
Well, that's true. And as you said, this meeting was in response to concerns by some of the member states over this wave of UFO sightings. Now, if those concerns had been voiced, and, you know, this is something that some of the member states are sort of murmuring about and saying, you know, we need to look into this, it would seem to me that there would be not one, not two, but maybe several ad hoc meetings of interested parties just to get information together to see if there is something here that would warrant scheduling an official UN meeting. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, I guess you could have something that is done as a preliminary gathering just to make a determination as to whether or not something official needed to be done. And maybe that was part of the rationale for the meeting on the 12th or the series of meetings on the 12th through to the 14th to for some of the UN member states to determine how far the UN should go in committing itself and its resources to this issue.
Yeah, it would seem to me, I mean, you have worked, I think, I could be wrong, haven't you worked in some UN missions?
I have had involvement with UN initiatives on involving East Timor.
Okay, well then, you know, as I know, that the UN doesn't move rapidly. There are many, many discussions before a step is taken. We have to take a step. It's called a break, and we'll be back right after this break with Dr. Michael Sala as we continue to discuss this mystery of the UN meeting on UFO disclosure.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Michael Sala. He is the founder and director of the exopolitics.org website and a pioneer in exopolitics. He is discussing with us, I guess we could say, the pathology of this event, the reporting of a special meeting at the United Nations dealing with UFO disclosure.
Dr. Sala, when the break took over, I was saying, and I'd like to get your response to this, your thoughts on this. The United Nations is not noted as a rapid-fire organization. They take their time, they study, they discuss, they appoint commissions, they appoint people to look into things and report back, and it takes a great deal of time normally for anything to happen officially, but there's a great deal of activity that goes on before something happens officially. What would you say to that? What's your response to that?
I would agree that the UN really isn't known for acting on policies with any great haste. It's a vast bureaucracy. It is a member-driven organization of approximately 192 states, where all these different states have their own interests and priorities, and they send their own people to occupy key positions. And it's something that has competing agencies, and so everything that the UN does is done through a very calculated, deliberate process that makes sure that policy is decided through a very rigorous, bureaucratic, consultative process. And so that means essentially that, yes, you are exactly right, that the UN will take its time on an issue, deliberate, and not act in a way that is going to get any member nations to be upset over not being consulted. And so something like confidential discussions about UFOs and what to do about them and how serious these are and what are the policies of the major nations like the US, Russia and China, it could well be that that would be discussed first in an informal, off-the-record set of meetings, as claimed to have occurred on the 12th, 13th and 14th, without there being any written record and without there being any way for this to be confirmed by those who didn't address, who weren't attending the meeting.
I have been a part of, in fact, I have done the briefings for meetings. I mean, I'm the guy with the PowerPoint presentation standing in front of the meeting doing the briefing for meetings that were UN meetings. They were meetings of UN personnel, people assigned to UN missions, that those meetings, I would say, were probably not even known about, much less on any official docket. They were not known about in New York. Simply because they happened in a faraway place, and they had to do with specific on-the-ground operations and things that that had come up suddenly that had to be dealt with. You know, my bosses said, you know, let's put a briefing together. Let's get these people in here for a briefing, and you do it. And so it was done, you know, like the next morning. And I'm quite certain that it's not on a list anywhere. And so I don't have any problem with the idea that this very well could have been such a meeting, because they happen all the time. So my point with this is, as I look at this with, you know, I guess I look at the world with policeman's eyes. I can't help it. That's what I did all my life. But as I look at this alleged evidence that I've been seeing on the internet, I haven't seen any evidence that indicates the meeting did not take place. I haven't seen anything that throws the baby out with the bathwater, except a few UFO researchers that have done it. I haven't seen any evidence that does it. And not only do we have Source A, we've had another guest on this show who says that after he read about all of this at your site and he heard about it on this show, he checked with one of his sources, who is a naval commander, and he was told that indeed the meeting did take place.
Yes, Dick Criswell. I had a conversation with Dick Criswell just to get some more information about his Navy commander, and he just elaborated a little about how reliable that person has been in the past for him, that he's known him since 1991, and in that time he has never found a commander to lead him astray, and that made him very confident that yes, there had been some meeting at the UN discussing UFOs, and unfortunately, for my purposes, what we have is another anonymous source, because the commander cannot be named, and he was relaying information from another source, a military source, who had attended the meeting, who did not appear to be the source A that the Pickering brothers have met with. And so what we have is the commander that advised Dick Criswell is in fact a kind of secondary source reporting on what he had been told by another independent source who had attended the meeting. But unfortunately we have confidentiality, anonymity, so it doesn't kind of get us beyond this problem we have at the moment, which is that even with Source A, that there are confidentiality requirements here. But nevertheless, it's very encouraging to have that independent confirmation that something did occur.
One of the things that I find really interesting as I watch all of this play out is that a whole different set of rules seem to be being applied journalistically than are applied to mainstream journalism. Mainstream journalism daily reports things like this. They will say, sources close to the president have said this, this, and this. An anonymous source in the White House has said this, this, and this. And people all over this country eat it up, and they say, yeah, that's an inside source, and, you know, and they take that as gospel truth. Now, here, what you're doing is the role of a journalist. You're reporting to us what sources, the information that sources have gotten to you. And what's happening is there are people saying, and I've seen this on the internet, they're saying, oh yeah, another anonymous source. So what? I mean, you can't check it out. Now, they don't apply that to mainstream journalism. Mainstream journalism has brought presidents down with anonymous sources. Has anybody in this audience forgotten Watergate? Has anybody in this audience forgotten the anonymous source, Deep Throat? and a president resigned over the information from an anonymous source. Now, I don't understand why, because we're talking about a meeting dealing with UFOs, that the same gravity is not applied to your anonymous source and Dick Criswell's anonymous source. That just won't wash. What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Well, I would agree that we need to look at anonymous sources as valid sources of information, and just because a source requires confidentiality because they might be serving military members, or maybe they have concerns over their safety or pensions, that this does not disqualify the legitimacy of their testimony. And when we are using anonymous sources, it's very important that the people that are communicating with that anonymous source can vouch for the accuracy of that source, and that this is a real person who does have the kind of background that is claimed, and that this is something that isn't just a kind of fly-by-night type affair, that this is a source who can be confirmed as having had a track history, or having at least have been known to the people who can confirm who the source is. And then that, I believe, applies to the source A, and also to Dick Criswell's source, who he has known of him since 1991. And similarly, the Pickering brothers have known of their source A for 2 years, and they have had lengthy conversations and have shared some of that with me, and also some of the documentation that the source A had passed on. And so what you have here is a way of being able to determine the reliability and the credibility of this anonymous source, because you have two people, the Pickering brothers, who have developed a relationship, have known of him for 2 years, met him on many, many times and conversed, had documentation shared, and actually have been able to send some of that documentation forward to others. And also you have another researcher, Robert Morningstar, who was able to independently verify the source's credentials and his military background. And so you have that independent verification that this source is indeed a serving member of the U.S. military, who is temporarily assigned to the State Department to perform certain diplomatic functions. And so I think he is a very important source of information, and shouldn't be dismissed merely because he has to maintain his anonymity, because you can, I'm sure you would appreciate that any military source who, even though authorized to leak information, if he publicly identifies himself, well, you can be pretty sure that his military career would come to an end.
Absolutely. We have to take a break. And when we come back from this break, I want to get into the content of the meeting that took place on the 12th. All right, folks, we'll be back with Dr. Michael Sala on the other side of this break. Don't go away.
Put away.
did you know the Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcasts right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Sala, and we're talking about this meeting that is alleged to have happened on February the 12th at the United Nations dealing with UFO disclosure. There's been a lot of chatter on the Internet about it, and some of the chatter has said, no, it didn't happen. Some of it has said, well, because of Laurent and his problems with his resume, we can't believe it happened. But Laurent was not the original source. Laurent was a later source. And even, I want to stress again, that even if there were some misunderstandings or misstatements in his resume, that certainly does not mean that he did not see and hear what he says he saw and heard. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. The two are actually not related at all. Now, I want to get into, Doctor, the content of this meeting on February the 12th. And I read your report, but some of the people who are tuning in are just waking up to this whole realm of information, and they haven't read your report. So in a kind of a thumbnail sketch, tell us what was the content of that meeting?
Well, the meeting that occurred on the 12th, according to the military source that the Pickering brothers relayed information to me about, was that it was a very high security meeting, and that they were discussing the recent UFO sightings. That was of chief concern to the attendees. The UFO topic was addressed. There was concern over what would lead to a destabilization of society if this was something that was disclosed to the world peoples, that there was a concern over a meltdown of society. The year 2013 was raised as a significant year from the perspective of either a meltdown or extraterrestrial contact. A later date of 2017 was raised as the kind of time when extraterrestrials would unambiguously show themselves. So the meeting discussed, according to Source A, extraterrestrial life as being an incontrovertible fact, and that there was a need to coordinate national responses to deal with a timetable that was up for discussion, and that timetable had as the end date two significant years, 2013 and 2017, for major events. But certainly by 2017, that extraterrestrial life would be unambiguously known to everyone on the planet. And so the meeting was discussing how different societies would be able to deal with extraterrestrial life being an indubitable truth. There were some concerns over the ability of certain societies to handle that, and that Source A mentioned, certain societies that were dominated by fundamentalist religious belief systems as having likely the most difficulty in adjusting to this reality of extraterrestrial life.
I have to admit, this is just a side comment, I have to admit I agree that there are societies, there are cultures on this planet, and not just a few of them, there are many cultures on this planet that have a hard time dealing with reality. There are some of those cultures within the United States of America who have difficulty dealing with realities. They see the world through lenses that bend and distort the light waves, and to them, that's it. That's reality, even though it isn't. That's my opinion. I just, you know, some people disagree with that. And that's fine. It's a free country, and people can have their opinions. But I certainly have seen and lived among people who really had no grasp on reality. And UFO disclosure, if it's a very unambiguous presence of extraterrestrials, is going to be very difficult for some of them to deal with. You mentioned the date 2017. Now, this was brought up at the meeting as being a date when extraterrestrial presence will be unambiguous. Everyone will know it. That indicates that someone brought that up, someone said it, and indicates then that someone has some means of knowing that. What are your thoughts on that? How do you think they know that?
Well, according to Source A, there was a group of extraterrestrials that he gave some names to, and the names weren't things that I felt were kind of very accurate descriptive terms, but nevertheless he referred to them as controllers or conformers. These are the names he gave, and apparently these extraterrestrials had the means to somehow communicate with the people that certainly had passed on this information to Source A, that the extraterrestrials would unambiguously show themselves by that year. I think the significant thing about the year, you know, whether or not it turns out to be 2017 or as opposed to something much earlier, I think the significant thing here is that by having this information leaked, what happens is that you signal to major governments that there's a timetable here. And whether it's a kind of 9-year timetable to 2017, or whether it's a 6-year timetable to 2013 or even sooner, nevertheless, that there's a timetable here. So in other words, you had better start taking steps to prepare your people for the truth, because it's going to be pretty difficult for certain segments of the population, and certainly the kind of more fundamentalist religious groups might be a major casualty or a major problem, but also scientists. The Brookings report from 1961 specifically identified the scientific community as the community that would be hit the hardest by this, and that is to me no accident, because when you think about it, the disclosure of extraterrestrial life will make redundant the most cherished scientific theories that many people have believed in for decades. I mean, you think of just how many tenured professors or government scientists or corporate scientists who are in their, say, 50s and 60s and have worked for 30, 40 years distinguishing themselves in a field that all of a sudden will become redundant. They'll be kind of like, they'll be regarded as witch doctors. And, you know, can these people retool? And I think a lot of these people will not be able to retool. The ones that will benefit the most will be the kind of present, the scientific elite who don't have much of a vested nature or status with the present system, people in graduate studies who will look at the information or the new scientific theories as a brave new world that they can commit themselves to, because like this will be their careers. But you look at those people who have been working for 30, 40 years in these fields, they're just not going to be able to retool, and I think that was one of the things that was actually raised at the meeting, that the number of suicides will go up dramatically, and you know, and that is something we frankly need to be prepared for.
It's got to be tough to be a PhD with all kinds of awards and all kinds of respect, and everyone just bows when you walk in the room, and you've written textbooks and you've taught in university, and you're well known throughout the world, and suddenly this thing happens, and most of what you've been saying is shown to be malarkey. And that's going to be very, very tough, and I certainly can see how they would reasonably anticipate a wave of suicides in that community. We have to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we will open the telephone lines for you to call in and talk with Dr. Sala. The telephone line is 1-800-289-1092. It's toll-free throughout North America. If you're outside of North America, you can send me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. We'll be back.
Nowhere, somewhere, anywhere.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. We are talking with Dr. Michael Sala this evening. We have callers already on hold, and we'll go to the phone line in just a moment. Let me remind you, if you have not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, our free weekly newsletter, you need to get over to kevinsmithshow.com and do so right now. You need to subscribe right now. It's free. And there's really absolutely no reason, no excuse for not subscribing, all right?
Dr. Sala, if let's just go to the phone line, and then I have a question I want to ask you, but I want to be sure we get our callers in this evening, too. So, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and where are you calling from?
Ryan in Washington.
Yes, Ryan.
Dr. Michael Sala, is there a way for the public to find out a little bit more about Sean and Clay Pickering, who seem to be the ones who are kind of generating the herb? Do you get most of your information from those two people? And I'm wondering how. I just have a little bit of a concern about getting information from two people that we haven't really. Have you ever played the phone game where rumor, you know, you tell one person and they tell another person? And the other question I had was, have you ever encountered another story similar to this where you've gotten information from people that you consider to be in a legit, something that you believe that concerning UFOs such as this in the past from the UN? Have you ever had another situation like this? Like, if they had a meeting, if I'm not saying they did have a meeting or they didn't, but let's say they did, then they must have had other meetings in the past, and there must have been other situations that have happened. Have you ever had another situation like this happen before?
I'm happy to answer those questions. Ryan, as far as Sean and Clay Pickering, they are associated with the New York Disclosure Network, and that's a group of researchers that, researchers, activists, that began after the Disclosure Project press conference in 2001 in New York City, and I actually got to speak at the New York Disclosure Network in New York City in 2003, and that was something that Sean and Clay Pickering set up. So that they have been associated with that since its inception. They are well known to the New York community of researchers, and Clay Pickering is happy to respond to people's questions. There is a Google video that is available where you can see Sean and Clay talk about a presentation they did recently at a New York conference, so you can get a better idea of who they are. They also have been helping other UFO researchers. They have been passing on information to Jim Mars, for example. He's another researcher they've worked with closely, and myself. And so I certainly consider them to be very reliable, and they don't exaggerate what's been relayed to them. As far as the second question, have I ever encountered another story such as this concerning the UN? There is a very interesting account that was relayed through a West Coast researcher by the name of Wesley Bateman concerning Sir Eric Gehry, who was the former Prime Minister of Grenada that was responsible for the 1978 General Assembly decision on UFOs and extraterrestrial life. That decision was actually adopted by the General Assembly, and incidentally, this is the 30th anniversary of that decision. But nevertheless, Sir Eric Gehry was deposed as the leader of Grenada on the very day that he had flown to New York City to meet with Secretary General Kurt Waldheim to disclose more information about his own personal experiences concerning UFOs, ETs, experiences that were backed up by physical evidence that he had back in Grenada, and that he was wanting to show the Secretary General about this evidence concerning extraterrestrial life. Well, unfortunately, on that very day that he was to meet with the Secretary General, There was a coup in Grenada. Sir Eric was deposed, and unfortunately he never was able to go ahead with the meeting. But nevertheless, he did travel to the West Coast, met with Wesley Bateman, and told Wesley Bateman an incredible story about what it was that he had found in Grenada that led him to take the initiative to get the UN to debate a resolution concerning extraterrestrial life and UFOs, and that resolution was eventually adopted as a UN decision. So that's about as close as I can think of anything parallel to this, but this is a very major development.
All right. Do you know what was the content that he gave to Wesley Bateman? What did he find in Grenada?
Basically, what he described to Wesley Bateman was that he was the Prime Minister at the time, and he held these kind of nightly sessions in one of the local restaurants. He owned a chain of restaurants himself, and people would come to him to discuss local issues. That was the way things was done there in Grenada. And he says a fisherman came and told him that there was some wreckage that was very unusual, that had washed up onto the beach, and he should come and have a look. So Eric went along with his detachment of bodyguards and police and so forth and had a look, and what he found was, he said, it was an 8-foot body wrapped, you know, it was an 8-foot body, a tall Nordic looking gentleman who was dead, obviously, who had washed up on the ocean, wearing this one piece suit, looked like a wetsuit. But the interesting thing about this suit was, he says, when he pulled at the material, it would stretch 2 feet, and when he let go of the material, it would just slowly go back into the original position, just making a humming sound. So it was a fabric that he had never seen before, and the being himself didn't look like anything from this world, so he thought it was an extraterrestrial entity. And there was also some wreckage nearby. So anyway, he instructed his bodyguards and police and so forth to take it all away on a flatbed truck and put it in a safe location, and then swore everyone to secrecy. And so then he began to lobby the UN to take the UFO issue, ET issue, seriously. And that eventually, when he was deposed, he tried to use this information as a bargaining chip to try and get back into power. But unfortunately, he wasn't successful, and he died out of power. Quite a broken man, really, discredited in the eyes of the Grenadian public. But nevertheless, he did a great service, because he really pushed through the UN this decision against the opposition of the US and some other major countries. So I think he really is someone that historically will be remembered as a very great man for that gamble he did, which eventually did cost him his prime ministership. And that was something he communicated to Wesley Bateman in very clear terms, that the coup was done to basically remove him as a threat to the secrecy system that had been set up around this whole UFO phenomenon.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Oh, yes. This is Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Hello, Kevin.
How are you doing, Kevin? How are you doing, Michael?
Outstanding.
Well, I've got a comment that's going towards the ones that were in that the UN meeting, the ones that took part in that meeting. I know, at least I think I know, that some of them listened to the Kevin Smith Show, and since it's open lines right now, I would urge them to call into the show and to tell their story about what happened in that meeting, and not to stop with Kevin Smith. Like George Norrie's show is going to be having open lines tonight as well, and let them tell the story. Let people know what went on in that room, in that meeting. That's what I'm challenging them to do.
I think it's a good idea
to call into this show, not just Kevin Smith, but call into Jeff Rentz, call into to George Norrie or Ian Punnett or whatever. Let people know about this.
All right. Thanks for the call. Yeah, that's a good idea. There's a very good chance that there are people listening to the show who attended that meeting and or who have knowledge of it. The telephone number is 1-800-289-1092, and we'd love to hear from you. This thing, you know, I have to tell you, I was a bit disturbed in reading your report about, you know, the Source A calling them the controllers or the conformers. You know, if they're coming here to control or if they're coming here to make me conform, they got a problem. They have a huge problem. And I'm not the only one. I'm huge enough. That's a huge problem that can only be solved by killing me, which is simple enough. I will not be controlled nor conformed.
Yes, that was a very interesting use of terminology by Source A. In my report, I actually said that I was very concerned that this was a term that did come loaded with some very psychological conditioning attached to it, that people would respond. It was it's a kind of almost like a psychological trigger. As soon as you talk about control and conform, it's a psychological trigger. So that kind of raised, in my mind, the concern that possibly Source A, while transmitting some accurate information about the meetings occurring, may have been contextualizing or describing the meetings in a way that could kind of convey a lot of psychological triggers. That, in other words, that there was an agenda here. It wasn't just a completely benign, neutral transmission of information that would inform us, but it was also something that was conveyed in a way that would also help condition us for what lies ahead.
Yeah, I agree. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Dick from Lebanon, Indiana.
Hello, Dick.
How you doing?
Hi, outstanding.
Dr. Sala.
I don't think he heard you, Dick.
Okay. Hi, Dr. Sala.
Hi, how you doing, Dick?
Yeah, just fine. I'm sorry I missed the first part of the show, but somebody called me and said, hey, you're being bouted around there. You better get up and defend yourself. And I said, well, what I was listening to, I wouldn't have to defend myself. But, you know, I've been in this field for 43 years, and I know that the UFO community eats their own. And I can assure you that the sources that I give Dr. Sala were genuine. We're still working on it. And by the way, Dr. Sala, I'm trying to get that naval commander to speak with you. I have not got any return calls yet, but I'm working on it. And the other source, the Mexican source, I have not received anything in the mail yet, but I'm hopeful that it'll happen. I have no return call there because there was no numbers left. Just said international call. So I'm kind of left, you know, kind of hanging out here. But I think that these sources will come to pass before it's over because, you know, and I have nothing to gain by telling you this, and I actually never even met you until we had had our phone call conversation the other day. So we're still working on our sources, and we hope that this thing comes full circle.
Well, thanks for calling, Dick, and yes, I'm very much appreciating your connecting with your naval commander. That will be very helpful. And I think there is something that is unfolding here, which is as people begin to explore how serious this issue is, and even though the sources at the moment are, you know, we have, well, two anonymous sources, if we include Dick Criswell's Navy commander and Source A from the Picking Brothers, and then we have another source, a French source, Gil Laurent, who has some controversy over his credentials. Nevertheless, what that does is it gives people an opportunity to look at this material, look at what was discussed or allegedly discussed at the meetings, and begin to prepare themselves, because I think what's happened is that this is really just the first step of getting the public to deal with the reality that the UN is now taking this issue seriously, and that I am very confident that at some point we are going to get confirmation confirmation that those meetings went ahead, and then we're going to have to move with the confirmation of what was discussed at the meetings and what are the implications of those discussions.
Well, let me ask something of both of you. You still with me, Dick?
Yes, I am.
All right. This question is for both of you. We'll start with Dr. Sala. How confident are you that the meeting actually took place? What percentage would you put on that? That I'm this percent confident that it took place.
I would put it up very high. Before I even spoke to Dick Criswell, I would have put it up in the 90%, 95%, 90%. And then with Dick Criswell saying that he had his own Navy commander confirming that the meetings went ahead, and this was someone he's known from 91 who has never misled him in any way, that would really, in my mind, help confirm that we are talking about something that's kind of in the high 90s in terms of confidence level, as far as I'm concerned, that there was a meeting. I'm not saying that everything that was said about the meeting is correct. I mean, I have some problems about what Source A has said in terms of using some of the psychological trigger terms like controllers, conformers, and so forth. But nevertheless, I believe that Source A is correct that a meeting did go ahead on that day, and he participated in some way with that.
All right, Dick, what percentage would you put on it?
I'd have to put it, Kevin, I'd have to put it at about 99.9, because I have real confidence in this naval commander, because he's never misled me, and the stuff that he's told me has always come to pass, and by other sources. And I feel confident that, that it did happen, and, I'm just hoping that this Mexican source that I got is going to send me this brochure. And I would like to state tonight, if there's anybody listening out there that has any more part of this puzzle, so to speak, they could either drop Dr. Sala a call or myself, and let's get this thing nailed down.
All right. Dick, thanks for the call.
Thank you, and thanks, Dr. Sala.
Thank you, Dick.
Okay, so a high 90%, upper 90s for Dr. Sala, and the same for Dick Criswell. They're confident that a meeting took place and that UFOs were discussed. Dr. Sala, of course, says, you know, that's the first thing to nail down, and then after that, once you get that confirmed, then you start working on confirming the content of the meeting. Now, let's talk about the content of that meeting. Oh, by the way, the telephone number, folks, is 1-800-289-1092. It's toll-free throughout North America. If you're outside of North America, send me a flash message. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com, all right? Let's talk about your confidence in what was said about the content of the meeting. Even though there were some psychological trigger words used, how much confidence do you have in what you were told about the content of the meeting?
Well, that's an interesting one. In terms of how accurate Source A is on the content of the meeting, I wouldn't be nearly as confident about that. I would say that there were deliberate obfuscations introduced in there. That's my assessment of what was said by him in terms of some of the issues he discussed, like he discussed the religion issue, how difficult that would be. He discussed the population issue, that the extraterrestrials were very concerned about rising population on the planet, and until we got the population issue under control, that they would be very reluctant to share any technology with humanity, because that would possibly contribute to the population increase. And that I was kind of very skeptical about that, because anyone who's done research on population studies knows that the big issue is not so much the way in which technology is used for building or creating resources for people, like creating food, but it's the distribution issue which is always the big problem. And that as you have rising levels of abundance or technology, the population tends to decrease. And so that was something that I didn't have that much confidence in. And so I would, to answer your question, I would not be as confident about Source A when it comes to the content. At this stage, I would say like 40 to 50%.
Okay, fair enough. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. John in North Carolina. Hi, Dr. Sallow.
Hi, John.
Yeah, I've been listening to you, and I've read most of your articles, and I'd like to get to the bottom of that, too. But the question I'd like to ask you is, could you comment on the Stephensville, Texas sighting? And that's about it. Good night.
Okay, John.
Well, the Stephensville sighting, I think, is one of those events that may have helped to trigger this meeting, because what you had was multiple reports, many witnesses, some very credible witnesses, saw a mile-long and half-mile-wide UFO over the sky in Stephensville, and that the UFO was being chased by jets. And then you had the Navy Reserve, who's was responsible for those jets, initially denying that they had any jets in the area, and then reversing themselves later, saying that they in fact had 10 jets in the area, and that's what people were seeing. You had a key witness by the name of Vicky Sorrell being intimidated by people who had kind of military bearing and getting mysterious phone calls. You had the sacking of a reporter. So it seemed that the Stephensville sighting was something that was getting a lot of attention, a lot of international coverage, and it may have been one of these triggers for this UN meeting to go ahead, because the meeting itself was designed to deal with the concern from a number of member states over the increase in UFO sightings around the planet.
One of the things that I don't understand about this is, and it's just one of those things that, you know, the cop in me says, you know, this really sticks out here. This sticks out, as they say in the South, this sticks out like a sore thumb. Here's a meeting that Source A tells us about, and he tells the Pickerings it's okay to release this information to the public, that we've had the meeting and that we're going to have the meeting, and this is what's going to be discussed. And you can release that to the public. The meeting, according to the content of the meeting, has to do with it's time for us to have a worldwide concerted disclosure effort. And we've got to get this information out there and get people acclimated to it. Those two things seem to agree. Here is the information about the meeting, and the meeting is about disclosure. You can release this to the public. Those two points seem to agree. What doesn't seem to agree is all of a sudden, after it's released to the public, nobody knows there was a freaking meeting. And you know, the UN saying, no, we didn't do it. And there's a debate about, did we even have a meeting? That doesn't fit. That does not comport with the first two points, which are all about disclosure.
Well, it's very interesting, because what we're trying to do here is second guess how a control group or a working group that is responsible for authorizing these leaks is operating here. I mean, was the intent to just kind of put this information out as a teaser to see how the public would react? Was it done to kind of like get the public interested so that the public would investigate, and as the public began to investigate, more information would come out? For example, Gil Laurent basically came out after that initial story went around the world, and Gil Laurent then disclosed his participation in the meetings. And I certainly don't want to exclude Gil Laurent
Bill Moran's testimony at this point. I acknowledge that there are problems with his.
Yeah, we have to accept the testimony, but with disclaimers and caveats.
Right. And was the intent to kind of flush out people? Was Gil Laurent someone that the intent was to flush him out? And is there going to be more examples of this? Dick Criswell's Mexican source, is this another person that will be flushed out and who will share information? And so is this the way in which this initial disclosure was intended to play out? But I certainly think that this is just the initial step here. We are going to have more things happening, and that the public reaction is something that is being very closely studied.
I would agree with that. We have a break coming up. Let me ask the caller just to stay on hold, and we will get to you right after the break. Gil Laurent is the one who disclosed that a decision was made that people who claim to have personal contact with extraterrestrials or personal information are to be targeted and discredited, and in some cases viewed as national security threats. As soon as that hit the internet, he got discredited. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you. get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Back, and we are talking with Dr. Michael Sala. Dr. Sala, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. If you will, tell us your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Terry from Ohio.
Terry from Ohio. Are you a first-time caller?
No, I called you last week.
Okay, very good.
I'm just slightly off the subject, more on the incident. One at Stevensville.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, I've been hearing that there was some kind of writing associated with those sightings, and is there more than just that incident that caused this supposedly UN uproar?
All right, now, when you say some kind of writing, be more specific. What was it, writing on the craft?
From the craft, yeah, I don't know. I just heard that there was some kind of writing from the craft.
Okay.
From the craft.
Dr. Sala, Terry, thanks for the call. Do you know anything about that?
I'm sorry, no, I don't know anything about writing on the craft. I mean, there was a video posted which showed some lights moving in a kind of linear curved fashion, but other than that, I don't know of any writing.
Yeah, I had not heard that. So, Terry, if you find something about that, send me a link to whatever information you find, and I'll be glad to review it. That's something I had not heard. The telephone number is 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. It's toll-free throughout North America. If you're outside of North America, send me a flash message with your questions or comments for Dr. Sala. I'll read them on the air, and we'll get him to respond to them. Now, I mentioned something that Laurent provided as content for the meetings he attended. He said that it was discussed that anyone claiming firsthand knowledge or contact would be targeted for being discredited. That doesn't sound like disclosure.
Well, it's a very interesting comment that was made about what was discussed there at that meeting, the meetings on the 13th and the 14th, according to Laurent. He mentioned a shift in official policy from, he didn't mention debunking, but essentially we know that there has been a debunking policy implemented since the 1953 Robinson panel. So Laurent said that in 2009, providing that the sightings increased, continued, and provided that the there was no threat to the stability of major global economies, democracies in particular, that there would be a policy of openness that would be adopted at the official level. And that's a significant shift, because if we go from debunking to openness, it means that at an official level now, it's fine to ask questions about UFOs and the possibility of extraterrestrial life, but that there would be a strict demarcation behind between openness to the possibility of extraterrestrial life and the reality of UFOs with the claims made by contactees or experiences that themselves constituted a national security threat, as you pointed out, and that these would be more or less debunked. So in other words, the debunking policy would continue for contactees, but as far as UFO sightings and speculation about what's behind them, is this life from another world, that there would be an openness to that. So what we have is a kind of incremental step forward.
All right. We have a flash message from London. This is, from Stephen in London. And he says, good evening, Kevin and Dr. Sala. Would not confirmation of the meeting be just the same as the government admitting the existence of UFOs? Ain't going to happen, really, is it? Do we really need someone to tell us that this situation is getting a little hairy?
Well, I think that it's not the same thing as confirmation of the meetings would be the same thing as disclosing the reality of extraterrestrial life. I think there are a number of ways in which the UN could do this. For example, this is the 30th anniversary of the historic decision taken by the General Assembly concerning UFOs and extraterrestrial life, where nations would coordinate efforts in terms of their observations and evaluations of sightings and of extraterrestrial life. So in other words, you do have a UN General Assembly decision which is on the books that makes it possible for nation states to have meetings concerning extraterrestrial life and UFO sightings without formally acknowledging that extraterrestrial life was real. And that's the important step here, that that confirmation at the meetings happened will not be the same thing as confirming that extraterrestrial life is real. What it would confirm is that nations are starting to coordinate and discuss the implications of UFO sightings and the possibility of extraterrestrial life. So what it would do would be basically making this a very important process that is acknowledged, and that the end goal might well be confirmation of extraterrestrial life, but that the process itself would not be based on the assumption that extraterrestrial life is real. I hope that distinction is clear.
Mm-hmm. We have a flash message from Italy, from Angelo, and he has got two questions. We'll try to get both questions in before the break. First of all, the internet, this is his first question. First of all, the internet is loaded with information right now about how we all should expect a false flag operation where the government pretends toward alien invasion. On that premise, what is the potential that the Phoenix Lights and the Stevensville UFO were not merely hologram projections, which would explain their silence and lack of air turbulence?
Well, that's something that has been discussed for a number of years, actually, that the government has been, or the secret government, or the that entity that is responsible for formulating and implementing policy when it comes to extraterrestrial life and UFOs has been planning for a false flag operation involving an alien invasion. And I think that it's probably one scenario that is contemplated along with a number of other scenarios like full disclosure, partial disclosure, and that all of these scenarios are discussed and debated and evaluated in terms of what would be the cost and benefits vis-a-vis the entities that are controlling this information. And I think we come to the question of, well, ultimately, what is it that the control group or the shadow government is trying to do by maintaining the secrecy policy? And I think one of the answers is that they want to maintain the network of secret projects that have been funded off the books without any kind of congressional legislative oversight. And they want to maintain that in a post-disclosure environment. So in other words, how can you maintain the kind of national security foundations or justifications for having an enormous black budget, which, according to some of the estimates that I've looked at, goes over $1 trillion a year, which is more than double the current Pentagon budget. So that's an enormous amount of money which is generated off the books without any congressional oversight and accountability. So how can you justify that? And one means would be a false flag operation involving an alien invasion, but I don't think it's the only one. Another scenario might be that the extraterrestrials are abducting millions of citizens. We don't know what they're doing, and we don't know what the implications of this are, but that essentially that would also justify a national security response where the current projects are kept in place. So, you know, to answer the question finally, I think that is the alien invasion threat involving holographic images that can be used to trick people is just one scenario, but I don't think it's the only one, and I don't think it's the one that ultimately people will accept, because I think too many people are now sophisticated enough about this extraterrestrial presence to not just accept a contrived false flag operation.
Well, in the world of ufology, that's true. In the world at large, you know, again, I know I'm going to get tons of email from people disagreeing with me on this, but I got to tell you, my opinion is that the world at large, even in countries like the United States, Great Britain, Canada, Germany, France, Australia, the industrialized nations, the population at large, when it comes to this subject, are still knuckle draggers.
I would agree with you there, Kevin. I think when it comes to the subject of ET's UFO life, many people just don't have a clue, could easily be deceived. But at the other, on the other hand, I think that the idea of a false flag operation is something which has now indelibly been marked into the consciousness of people, just because so many credible sources...
So what you're saying is that they would recognize it as such?
Yeah, that the concept of a false flag operation, if you go back, to the year 2000, very few people would have understood what a false flag operation was. Now, because of 9/11 and because of so many people, Jim Mars and others have written books about 9/11 being a false flag operation, that many people have now been exposed to the idea of a false flag operation and to the reality or to the possibility that governments do conduct these regularly, so that would at least raise in the popular consciousness the possibility of a false flag operation.
All right, I hate to do it. We have to take a break. We will be back in just a moment. You be here too, okay?
And I'm walking in the city in the middle of the night.
You know, there's never been a better time for you to start your own broadcast. I know there are a lot of paranormal investigators. I know there are a lot of people who are paranormal experiencers who want to have their own broadcast. Well, now you can, right here at Steel Eye Media Network. It is within your grasp. You can do it, and we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call today at 1-800-318-1008.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. We are talking with Dr. Michael Sala. We are also on our final approach. We've only got a few minutes left here until about 15 minutes until the end of the show tonight. If you want to call in with a question or comment, we will still take one call, maybe two, depends on how rapidly you speak. All right. 1-800-289-1092. Dr. Sala, we were talking about the possible false flag scenario. I think people should understand that things are discussed all the time as possibilities in meetings and planning sessions, and it's sort of a, well, what if? That doesn't mean there's an actual plan to implement or to go operational with anything like that. Many, many ideas come up before an operation plan is put in place on anything. And you know, as you say, that's probably one of the scenarios. And but you said you don't think that will happen because people would recognize it as being false flag if it was. I think I agree with that. I think even though people in general are not very well informed on the subject of UFOs and extraterrestrials, they're basically at pablum level, still, I think they're sharp enough to see and to recognize a false flag if such were to happen.
Exactly, yes. And I think the fact that you actually have so many people who have now been sensitized to the idea of a false flag operation because of the work of, say, Jim Mars, Alex Jones, Michael Rupert, and so many others talking about that in relation to 9/11, and so many videos that have come out. And then if you had a bunch of UFO researchers, exopolitics researchers, jumping up and down saying, oh, this kind of threat or that this invasion that the government is telling us about from extraterrestrials is a false flag operation, I think people would take that seriously, especially as once the ET issue is taken seriously or accepted as real, that those people who have been working on this in this field for so many years without being acknowledged will all of a sudden have a lot of credibility. And so if these people now have credibility saying that that the government is conducting a false flag operation, then I think many people would take that seriously.
Yeah, I think so. Let's go to the phone line for our final call this evening. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Yes, Mark.
Dr. Sala, my question is, how do you think the mainstream media will start to prepare the public psychologically for the ET presence? And I'll take the answer offline. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Well, thank you for that question. I think we are already starting to see that in terms of the Seeing is Believing program that Peter Jennings had, where you had a two-hour special back in early 2005, and you had the first hour that was devoted to UFOs as a serious phenomenon, and you had a lot of credible people coming forward saying that they had seen this object and that it was very real. And I think the first half of the show was acknowledged as being something that was very well done. But the second half of the show that focused on the abduction phenomenon kind of discredited that. But I think, nevertheless, the fact that it actually devoted an hour to the abduction phenomenon, talking about the allegations behind it, I think what you have is that you're having a kind of conditioning of the public to associate extraterrestrial life with those performing the alleged abductions. And I think that is a conditioning process that we will probably see happening again and again. And that will be very different to the early 1950s, 1960s reports of these kind of blonde, blue-eyed, extraterrestrial, human-looking beings that came forward and gave people rides on these ships and giving them amazing adventures. We're not going to see that. But that's going to be debunked as kind of fraudulent, charlatan claims by individuals, but those coming forward with claims of having been abducted and subjected to invasive experiments, their testimonies are going to be accepted as being genuine, real, and an important national security threat.
All right. In other words, those who have a story that fits the party line will be brought forward and disclosure will be made. Those whose story does not fit the party line will be discredited.
Exactly, yes. I think the abduction phenomenon fits the party line that extraterrestrials are a national security threat that justifies a massive investment in these hidden projects that can target extraterrestrials if we want. And that the testimonies that don't fit the party line, along the lines of the kind of classic contactee testimonies of the 1950s and 60s, will be just totally discredited.
All right, what's your take on it now? We've got just 3 minutes left. What's your take? Are there extraterrestrials that may be a threat to us?
I believe so. I think that there are some extraterrestrials that genuinely don't have the best interests of humanity at heart. And I think that they have been operating with some tacit understandings and even agreements with the shadow government or those responsible for formulating policy regarding extraterrestrials and UFO life. And this is something that has led to some violations, invasive interactions with individuals. But the majority of extraterrestrials, in my opinion, have displayed a very benign, non-invasive, very respectful attitude towards humanity, and that these are beings that we have been told about in terms of the contactee reports that continue to occur over the years, even though that they are often discredited by many researchers, and certainly the government, that I think that is very real. So to answer the question briefly, yes, most extraterrestrials are benign, respectful, that don't constitute a threat, but a small minority or a significant small percentage do constitute some kind of threat, which would, in my mind, justify a kind of national security response.
We're sort of in the position of dolphins. If you can put your mind into a dolphin for a moment and be a dolphin and look at us, are we benign or are we hostile to dolphins? Well, it just depends on which ship you're talking about.
That's a great metaphor, and I think we have dolphins and whales that are still being hunted by some countries, and yes, that I think is a good metaphor.
Doctor, I want to thank you for being with us. It's been very informative, and I'm quite interested in following up on this as you get more information, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
I'd love to come back, and I look forward to sharing any more information that I find out about this issue. Thank you, Kevin.
Outstanding. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as we wrap up this evening's show. Let me remind you folks about the K-Files e-zine. If you have not yet subscribed, ask yourself why. I mean, what good reason do you have? It's free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. It always carries updates for what's happening with the show. Things like this site transition that's going to take place, and information about what to do if you're unable to hear the show by clicking on our player. All that's going to be in this week's K-Files e-zine, and everyone that is subscribed will get it. How about you? This has been a phenomenal week, has it not? But each week is.
So be sure that you don't miss a single second of any one of our shows. When you do, you miss a universe of information. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back on Monday. You be here too. Until then, so long, everybody.